What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and my co-host, Thomas Drance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We're live from the Mobile Kintech studio here at Rogers Arena. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. What's going on, Drance?
Not much, buddy. Hope you had a great weekend. Fun game on Saturday night at Rogers Arena. Lots of excitement, lots of costumes around town. I mean, it's a good time of year.
It is. It's a fun time of year. It's very much hockey weather, hockey season, all of that. Sidney Crosby was in town on the weekend. Two good Eastern Conference. I don't want to throw the Penguins in the good Eastern Conference team bucket. But
I think they'd be really good if you were able to play like a half court game. Like if it was that quarter rink game that the kids play, man, I think they'd be sick. But really felt like they got skated off the ice once the Canucks were able to unfurl their rush attack in the second period.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about the game on Saturday. We'll look ahead tonight to the Canucks hosting the Carolina Hurricanes, and the Hurricanes are just wrapping up their morning skate on the ice in front of us here at Rogers. We'll talk to Kevin Woodley a little bit later on in the show as well. Interesting goaltending situation developing for the Hurricanes, and it also looks like Kevin Lankinen is going to get his fifth straight start for the Canucks tonight. So lots to get into on the goalie front with Woodley later. Lots to get into in general with the Canucks, so let's go right into the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, October 28th, and the headlines are the Canucks looking for a fifth straight win tonight when they host the Carolina Hurricanes, and that's, of course, coming off their 4-3 win over the Penguins on Saturday. And as you said, certainly, you know, always an exciting occasion when Sidney Crosby and Malkin and Letang are in town, and especially considering the ties between these two organizations and the number of ex-Pittsburgh Penguins now with the Vancouver Canucks. That's not the Pittsburgh Penguins of 5, 6, 7 years ago, though, certainly. And, you know, that was not a statement win for the Canucks, obviously, considering the Penguins had played on Friday. We know the deficiencies they have, as you said, the lack of speed really evident. So it certainly wasn't that. But I did think the second period was like a proof of concept period for the Canucks. Probably the best proof of concept period we've seen from them so far of, you know, four goals from four lines showing off the speed, skill, the depth of the forward group in a big way in that second period.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing I've been thinking about a little, Jamie, is and wrote about at The Athletic today, is Sprong gets in the lineup, but he's been a healthy scratch on three occasions across his first 2 weeks. Jake DeBrusque, yet to find the net for the Canucks, yet to find the back of the net. 4 points in seven games, not shooting a ton. Also had, you know, I thought a pretty wasteful 2-on-1 that he led, shortly after which Anthony Beauvillier opened the scoring for the Pittsburgh Penguins the other way. And in that moment, I was like, man, that is just exactly how it works when things aren't going a player's way, right? Like, you just slightly overthink it at one end, and then the bounce goes against you at the other, and it snowballs. One thing I liked, though, and I thought was really obvious during the game, was it felt like DeBrusque really simplified from there. Like, he was a monster down low. Manufactured two really dangerous sort of second stick opportunities, even though Vancouver dined out on the rush in that sort of period. And as that game went along, I thought DeBrusque's second half of that game was one of the strongest efforts we've seen from him. So I actually kind of like that from the perspective of, man, if DeBrusque is just going to the net and playing a simple game like that, the goals are going to come.
Yeah.
So I like, but my point, just to sort of zoom out and focus on the big picture here, is we're seeing this proof of concept, and the two highest upside offensive ceiling guys that they added haven't even been firing yet, right? Which I think is exciting, because you look at it, right? This team that was sixth from last at generating 5-on-5 shots last season has dipped after that Penguins game, and granted, the Penguins will help your numbers, into the top 10, right? Like, that's a massive improvement, even if they regress a bit and settle in around league average. That would be a phenomenal step that meaningfully elevates the ceiling of what this team could be.
Yeah, and Caleb from Richmond Texan, how much of that minute plus of goals was the Canucks' new take on offense? How much was just the Penguins being a slower team? Look, that contributes, of course, but one of the hallmarks of, like, the reason you add speed and skill to your lineup is so that you can punish the slower teams, right? So, like, yes, it's not always going to be that easy, but if you couldn't do it against the Penguins or you weren't able to, that would be a big source of concern. So, like, I think it's an important caveat to note just how badly the Penguins are struggling defensively this year,
yes,
especially off the rush. That absolutely matters, but like, again, that's that they wanted to put themselves in a position to punish those types of teams.
Well, put it this way, like, the I saw the data was that the Edmonton Oilers had over 20 odd man rush opportunities. So it's not like the Canucks exactly, like, outperformed the elite rush attacking team in this,
yep,
league against the same opponent who was just slightly more tired, having been completely ventilated,
yes,
by the Oilers.
Dominated by the Oilers,
right?
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a Penguins effect. Right, they're effectively like a rush funnel, a rush,
yep,
offense funnel for teams. But I still think you can note that, hey, last year's Canucks probably don't look. They may come back in that game. They may win that game, but it wouldn't have looked like that.
No,
and specifically, what I'd note is, like, okay, first goal, that's work down low. Good keep in by Tyler Myers,
mm-hmm,
by the way. Don't know if that play was discussed enough. Obviously the pass by Garland and the finish by Pettersson, textbook, as he breaks through. Big moment,
yes,
in that game. The second goal is actually a relatively conventional counter-attacking opportunity generated by a really smart defensive play at the offensive blue line by Kiefer Sherwood. That's like a mistake by the Penguins, but a relative, like, within the range of normal mistake by the Penguins. And that's a smart counter, a sharp counter by Sherwood and Blueger to punish the mistake. The third goal, that was where you can see the Penguins effect.
Yes.
Right? JT Miller had time to, like, set up a picnic for his family, barbecue some hot dogs, charcoal too, like, not even a gas grill, like, literally build the fire, like, let the soak the coals, give them time to dry. Like, he had so much time. There was no one on the map with him. And that is, I think, the Penguins effect coming. And now here's where, though, I think that interacts with what the Canucks did well. I don't know that JT Miller would be that far out front of the play with how this team played last year. Like,
mm-hmm,
that to me felt like the one that was most proof of concept. Then you've got Sprong just completely demolishing Erik Karlsson down the right wing. You know, to me, that's like, an ordinary course breakdown. I mean, it's a brutal defensive play by Karlsson, like, completely ridiculous. If that happened to Erik Brännström in one of his first three Canucks games, he'd be out of the league.
He'd, like, be done.
I'm not kidding, right?
Yep.
So it was that scale of mistake. Or poor play by the Penguins defensively. But nonetheless, I think that third goal is the one where it's like JT Miller that far out front of the play. That is new, in my opinion, in terms of how this Canucks team is approaching manufacturing.
I think the other thing that also stood out to me, not just the speed of the group, right, and that the focus on rush offense, and as you said, like, okay, JT Miller's going to be in that position in a way he wouldn't have been next year, but I think just the level of skill up and down the lineup is so much higher than it was last year. And not even necessarily just on the goals, but there were other shifts where, you know, that third line, which, okay, last year, yes, the third line was capable of making skilled plays because it had Connor Garland and Dakota Joshua on it, but now it's Teddy Blueger and two newcomers, Kiefer Sherwood and Danton Heinen, and they're making, like, multiple east-west passes on,
yeah,
a shift in the offensive zone, right? And if, like, you think of the guys who the other forwards that those guys are taking minutes from last year, like, they weren't doing that, right? And so now you have that, and then
there's,
you know,
a lot less cardio and a lot,
yes,
sharper finishing skill.
And then, you know, you mentioned the Elias Pettersson getting his first of the year, and we can touch base on that again in a second here. But of course, the other big first was Arshdeep Bains scoring his first NHL goal, hometown kid, in front of his in front of the fans here at Rogers Arena. The team he grew up cheering for. Incredible moment. First of all, just a really special moment. So a huge congratulations to Arshdeep Bains. But I also was thinking, you know, that version of the fourth line looks like a great fit for Arshdeep Bains.
And the fans nailing the reaction.
Yes.
Right? Because again, we sort of noted, for example, that this is usually a crowd that brings their A game, the,
yep,
JT Miller chance, while,
yep,
Who was the player who was hurt? The Rooney.
Oh, yes, yeah.
In that Flames game, that was like an ugly moment. But those are rare. Usually this crowd, this Canucks crowd brings it and elevates their game at big moments. And the standing ovation for Archdeep Baines as his first goal was announced, that was phenomenally cool for the Surrey-born
player. Yeah, that was fantastic. And, you know, big picture for Archdeep Baines, like, because we've talked about, you know, he's a skill player ultimately, right? He's not the type of guy who's going to come up from Abbotsford and you're just going to put him in an energy bottom six role, like a classic energy bottom six role. And so we've seen them try him with JT Miller and Brock Besser. And it just feels like, okay, he's an offensive player, but that might be asking a bit much for a guy coming up and, you know, trying to establish himself in the NHL. With Suter and Sprong, he's got guys who can play offensively, right? Certainly Daniel Sprong, but even Pugh Suter was playing on the first line for the Canucks last year. So all of a sudden, it's a fourth-line role, but one where he's still in a position to succeed and make plays offensively. And now all of a sudden, you look at it, and the playmaking with him, you know, getting going, and I thought he made some other nice plays in that game as well. Sprong, who Tocchet was shouting out, now you've got a fourth line that looks pretty dangerous out there.
Yeah. Well, and Sprong, I think, adds such a new dimension to this team, just given his overall skill level and his speed. You know, I do think that as much as, like, Heinen's brought this speed and sort of disruptiveness to the lineup, Sherwood, I mean, night and day with Sam Lafferty.
Oh,
I feel like everyone that kept telling me about how great the Sam Lafferty trade needs to watch Kiefer Sherwood play 10 games and just be like, oh, right, that's...
Yep.
A huge difference, a seismic upgrade. And then the, you know, the DeBrusk of it all is sort of different. I just think with Sprong, like, if you're going to develop into this, you know, not just an average offensive team, but, but a team with an offensive ceiling that's a championship caliber level, I feel like Sprong hitting is crucial. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I do. I feel like he's almost like the pivot point of where this experiment turns for me, because when you look at the rate stats, when you look at sort of how he's produced 5-on-5 offense, the spark plug sort of heat check element that he can bring, like if this team can get him to the point where he's in the lineup every game, I just think it adds a totally new level of quality to that attacking depth quotient that you're getting into.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think, again, the fourth line, that look of the fourth line is a nice fit for Sprong, too, because all of a sudden it's fourth line that you're expecting to go out there and make plays. You're asking them to be an offensive line. That's good for Baines. It's good for Sprong as well. And it's got to be really encouraging for Sprong to hear the shout-out from Rick Tocchet after that game.
And he went out of his way to do it, which is why I sort of went back to pick at it during that scrum. This team's scoring goals, but I will say this, right? Within the context of our conversation, the giddy conversation about Vancouver's massive level up offensively, this Carolina team's a different beast.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, this is the purpose of trying to be more aggressive to manufacture rush offense is not about blowing out the Penguins or giving yourself that margin for error where you can overcome a 2-0 deficit in the blink of an eye. Right? It's about how goals need to be scored once you bump into the Carolinas of the world, right, who are extremely robust defensively and are killer at just, you know, removing space and time from the ice sheet entirely with their Rod Brind'Amour brand of stress hockey. You know, it's not about tooling a Penguins team that's obviously going nowhere in October. It's about getting the key goal you need to survive the game you'd otherwise lose, or to turn the game you might otherwise lose come April and May, right? It's having that answer so that, you know, you don't score just three goals in the decisive two games of your season. That's sort of what it's about. And so, not that we're going to get a definitive answer to whether or not that worked tonight, right? We're not going to get that answer for months.
Nope.
But I do think this is an interesting sort of test case with one of the league's most dominant two-way clubs, a team that really thrives with just racking up OZP and keeping the stress on you and challenging you to make mistakes. Can the Canucks still sort of get out and go and manufacture rush offensive chances or rush looks, excuse me, against a team this sturdy defensively? That to me is like one of the most fascinating dynamics to watch at the game tonight. Hurricanes versus
Canucks. If you're wondering what to expect from Carolina tonight, it is more of the same from what we've seen of Carolina.
Yep.
Over the years, they are playing really well right now. And, you know, an interesting contrast with the Penguins, right? The Penguins were on this Western Canadian swing. They were really struggling. They'd lost all of those games. Carolina not doing exactly the same road trip, but their last three games, 3-2 over the Oilers, 4-2 over the Flames, 4-1 over the Kraken. So they're coming out west. They're having no problem. They're picking up victories. And, you know, as you said,
with huge shots on goal margins.
Yeah.
Right?
And,
like, they've been controlling play.
They haven't controlled their worst possession game of the year. They controlled 56% of the shot attempts. That's their worst one of the year, and that was on the road against Edmonton, who are the second best shot attempt share team in the league, right? So it's like the hardest game possible from a pure possession control standpoint, and they still controlled 56% of the shot attempts.
Yeah, and so watch for this, right? Like, Carolina does not care about maintaining possession as they cross various lines. They are built to stress you out. Stress hockey, that's what they call it internally. And the idea is effectively to force you into errors and to, you know, battle like absolute jerks over every square inch of ice. And they've got the players to do it. They've got the speed to do it. They defend at warp speed and just win battles, grind it out. It's why a player like Jalen Chatfield, who had some limitations, right, has become a fixture for them and really probably a top four capable guy in that system. They can get more out of various players. I used to say this about Tyler Myers. I thought Myers would be like a great fit with how they play, right? Because if you remove some of the puck handling decision making and it's just like use your frame to be giant and disruptive, right? That's like perfect.
Yep.
So I think this system, the structured way that the Canes play, I do think makes them a unique opponent in every game they play, especially for this Canucks team. And I think it's a really interesting signpost as we talk about the evolution of this team this season, given that, you know, yes, okay, they are generating shots at a way more promising rate than they did last season. They are not preventing them at quite the same level. And I do think you're seeing breakdowns. Like, there were moments where, like, the Penguins were worth three goals last night.
Well, Lankinen had to make some big saves, especially when it was 2-0, obviously.
And
right?
You had the huge Noel Acciari miss early.
Yep.
Like, you had some close calls. And you had some close calls against Chicago, right? Like, as much as this Canucks team has been winning games and scoring goals and playing pretty good hockey, especially like really good offensive hockey and great hockey whenever Quinn Hughes and Philip Hronek are on the ice together, I do think you're seeing some gaps in terms of their defensive form relative to the high standard that they set last year. I bring this up because when the Canucks were killer in zone and relied on opportunistic finishing last season, they were in some ways the mirror image or a bizarro mirror image of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
And they won both games they played against the Hurricanes. If the Canucks can attack, but the Hurricanes have an answer for that, but they're leaving more open ice in sort of the guts of the ice, as Rick Tocchet would call it, in their own end. Well, even the Hurricanes can eventually punish you on that. So that's sort of where I'm curious to see how the club's offensive improvement and, to this point, what looks like maybe a bit of a step back defensively as they adjust to this new method of playing. How does that hold up against a team that they performed really well against last year?
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating matchup with the Hurricanes in town.
We got to get in a Lankinen.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the lineup notes here.
Perfect.
So I'll just run through some of the news and notes from Game Day Skate today, and then to get ahead of ourselves a little bit, Lankinen will be the starter, so we can talk about him in a second. But did want to mention Eric Branstrom and Harshie Baines. They did the Abbotsford shuffle again over the weekend after the game against Pittsburgh on Saturday. So they went down to Abbotsford yesterday. They're back up today to be in the lineup as the Canucks continue to try to accrue that cap space. Derek Forbort rejoins the team today following, again, he was away for personal reasons, and now the team confirming that he was away because of the passing of his father. So condolences to Forbort and his family. Obviously a very difficult situation, but I'm glad for him that he's able to get back with his teammates and that he was able to be on the ice for morning skate today with his teammates. Team had the day off yesterday, so it was a relatively rare full morning skate today. No surprise. Same lines as Saturday. I won't run through them, but again, exact same lineup as Saturday. The extras today were Neils Amon, Dakota Joshua, Derek Forbort, and Noah Juulsen. And notably, Dakota Joshua not in a non-contact jersey, I believe. A full participant officially, as much as he had been. You know, he was wearing a non-contact jersey in some of these recent practices, but really was going through the kind of full participant motions. And today, no non-contact jersey, just back as a full participant. So good sign for Dakota Joshua. And then, of course, the other takeaway from morning skate today, Kevin Lankinen looks set to get his fifth start in a row for the Canucks, and he has been very, very good. There are going to have to play Archer Shelovs at some point, but Kevin Lankinen right now doing a great job for the Vancouver Canucks.
For sure. I mean, at some point, like, so is the plan now that you give Lankinen these two tough opponents coming into home ice?
And then you push it, because then after that, it's San Jose.
San Jose. So you push him to play against San Jose. I mean, that is a tough signal to send a young goaltender who entered this season, you know, like, first on your healthy depth chart, right? He started game one for this team, right? Like, that. Now, he had two tough outings against the Flames and the Tampa Bay Lightning, but still, I mean, this is a player who the organization has, you know, for most of the last 2 years had very high hopes for, right? Went to him for game three in the playoffs and let him run with that opportunity. I don't know. I mean, this game against a Hurricanes team that can struggle to finish, like, felt like a potential confidence builder. But I guess they're just letting Lankinen run. Like, Lankinen's the guy now.
And it would seem tough to put him in against the Devils, given their offensive talent and the way they create high danger chances. And look, right.
If they were going to split these two games,
it would be
tonight. This was the game to play Shelovs.
Yeah, and you're right that it is probably a tough pill to swallow and a tough message for Shelovs. I guess the internal consideration is probably, like, what's tougher for his confidence? Not getting in one of these two games or potentially getting shredded? If you're concerned about against New Jersey.
But if you're concerned about that, you've already told yourself everything you need to know about your goalie platoon, which is that Lankinen is the guy, right? And this isn't a 1A, 1 or a 1A, 1B. Like, this is Shelovs is probably this team's third string goaltender when Demko comes back.
I mean, I think that's where it's pointing. Absolutely. Now, he could change that story, but as of right now,
well, he might need some of Lankinen's help to change that story, to be totally honest with you, Jamie, right? Like, that's sort of where we're getting to. So, I just think it's notable, not from a stir up controversy about a goaltending decision perspective, but this speaks volumes about sort of the internal pecking order and just how perhaps cemented Lankinen is at this point, just 5 games into his Canucks tenure, as this team's first choice starter for the time being.
And I do think it's worth considering also from Lankinen's perspective, you know, a backup goalie going now all of a sudden playing, you know, his fifth game in a row. Like, at a certain point, I know their games have been spaced out. They continue to be spaced out here, but you do have to make sure you're managing his workload and managing his starts as well if you want to keep a high-level performance coming from Kevin Lankinen.
Yeah, the scouting thing too, right? Now he's been around. Like, it's not like he's a newfound quantity. But, you know, we talk about this sometimes with goaltenders. We talked about it a lot during that Spencer Martin, Colin Delia season where it's one thing to be the guy, you know, every two or three times a month.
Yep.
And a totally different thing to run with the ball here from a challenging standpoint. There is an element to which Lankinen as a 9:30 goaltender, right, is probably not a reasonable expectation,
no.
A reasonable bar for him to continue to clear. The seams can start to show as the usage really ramps up.
Yep.
That's
always something you got to monitor when a goalie's going from taking on a significantly increased workload from what they've done previously. Quick playoff standings update. I just wanted to mention this. Canucks officially now with a better points percentage than the Calgary Flames. 714 to 688.
So first in the division.
They have already leaped. No, Vegas, I believe.
Vegas,
was first in the division. But
okay.
Canucks have settled in second over the Calgary Flames. And I think Dom's model still has them with 106 points projected to finish with. Obviously a 95% chance to make the playoffs as well.
And facing one of two teams in the NHL in the Carolina Hurricanes with a Stanley Cup probability above 10% according to the model. So that's why this game is going to be such an interesting one to monitor. And monitor not just from the perspective of, like, can the Canucks win tonight on a Monday night while I'm watching the game? But if you want to evaluate this team over the course of the season through the lens of can they win a cup, I think tonight is going to be a very interesting data point early on.
A marquee matchup, no doubt about it. Betting update for us on the game tonight, Transit.
Yeah, my betting update on the game tonight is that the Canucks are underdogs. Yeah. Wow.
A lot of respect for the Canes.
Well, and there should be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that is telling. So the Canucks are plus 115 underdogs at home. Hurricanes favored minus 135. That's pretty significant. That's like a 55% implied probability of victory for the Hurricanes. Over-under is set at 6, and the puck line, you can get the Canucks at minus 230, plus 1.5. In terms of, I've been really doing poorly here now. I had some really close ones. Feel like I'm on a tough streak here in terms of my touts.
You're putting all your energy into your like football parlays.
100%.
Because that's where you actually make money.
That's where I do well. Well, it's a more predictable game, football.
Absolutely.
And I'd say this: I never bet hockey.
Yeah, in fact,
so I'm like new. I'm a newbie.
Yeah.
Really. I like Lankanen saves tonight, though.
Ooh, yes. Okay.
Okay. I feel like that's the play. Now it's set. The line's set pretty high. 29.5. Is the over-under. So let's take him. I'll put one unit on him at 30.
Mm-hmm.
That's plus 100. And I'll put another unit on him at 35. That's plus 300.
All right.
So hit both of these, and I'll be back in the black.
There you go. Just keep telling yourself that. Just need these ones to come through, and I'm back in the positive. Well,
this is just for fun, to be clear. I'm not actually wagering on hockey.
And I would advise against anyone tailing you for the whole season.
100%.
I don't want that experiment out there. We don't need that.
I would advise anyone against sports gambling in general.
Yeah, that's probably
just
fair.
Just kidding. If you do it with one of our sponsors.
All right, we'll take a break there. That's the whiteboard for today. We'll come back. Lots more to get into coming out of the weekend for the Canucks and looking into this one. We'll hear from Rick Tocchet at some point as well here. And then Kevin Woodley joins us in the final hour. Also here at Rogers Arena, it is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.